Chapter 19. The far past, it was not properly news, it was history. But the world is enormous now, and prodigiously populated. That is one change, and another is the lightning swiftness of the flight of tidings, good and bad. The Empress is murdered. When those amazing words struck upon my ear in this Austrian village last Saturday, 3 hours after the disaster, I knew that it was already old news in London, Paris, Berlin, New York, San Francisco, Japan, China, Melbourne, Cape Town, Bombay, Madras, Calcutta, and that the entire globe with a single voice was cursing the perpetrator of it. Since the telegraph first began to stretch itself wider and wider about the earth, larger and increasingly larger areas of the world have, as time went on, received simultaneously the shock of a great calamity. But this is the first time in history that the entire surface of the globe has been swept in a single instant with the thrill of so gigantic an event. And who is the miracle worker who has furnished to the world this spectacle? All the ironies are compacted in the answer. He is at the bottom of the human ladder, as the accepted estimates of degree and value go. A soiled and patched young loafer, without gifts, without talents, without education, without morals, without character, without any born charm or any acquired one, that wins or beguiles or attracts, without a single grace of mind or heart or hand that any tramp or prostitute could envy him, an unfaithful private in the ranks, an incompetent stone cutter, an inefficient lackey, in a word, a mangy, offensive, empty, unwashed, vulgar, gross, mephitic, timid, sneaking, human polecat. And it was within the privileges and powers of this sarcasm upon the human race to reach up, 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 and strike from its far summit in the social skies the world's accepted ideal of glory, and might and splendor and sacredness. It realizes to us what sorry shows and shadows we are. Without our clothes and our pedestals we are poor things and much of a size. Our dignities are not real, our pomps are shams. At our best and stateliest we are not sons, as we pretended, and teach, and believe, but only candles, and any bummer can blow us out. And now we get realized to us once more another thing which we often forget or try to, that no man has a wholly undiseased mind. That in one way or another all men are mad. Many are mad for money. When this madness is in a mild form it is harmless, and the man passes for sane. But when it develops powerfully, and takes possession of the man, it can make him cheat, rob, and kill. And when he has got his fortune, and lost it again it can land him in the asylum or the suicide's coffin. Love is a madness. If thwarted it develops fast. It can grow to a frenzy of despair and make an otherwise sane and highly gifted prince, like Rudolf, throw away the crown of an empire and snuff out his own life. All the whole list of desires, predilections, aversions, ambitions, passions, cares, griefs, regrets, remorses, are incipient madness and ready to grow, spread, and consume when the occasion comes. There are no healthy minds, and nothing saves any man, but accident, the accident of not having his malady put to the supreme test. One of the commonest forms of madness is the desire to be noticed, the pleasure derived from being noticed. Perhaps it is not merely common, but universal. In its mildest form it doubtless is universal. Every child is pleased at being noticed. Many intolerable children put in their whole time in distressing and idiotic effort to attract the attention of visitors. Boys are always howling off. Apparently all men and women are glad and grateful when they find that they have done a thing which has lifted them for a moment out of obscurity and caused wondering talk. This common madness can develop, by nurture, into a hunger for notoriety in one, for fame in another. It is this madness for being noticed and talked about which has invented kingship and the thousand other dignities, and tricked them out with pretty and showy fineries. It has made kings pick one another's pockets, scramble for one another's crowns and estates, slaughter one another's subjects. It has raised up prize fighters, and poets, and villages' mayors, and little and big politicians, and big and little charity founders, and bicycle champions, and banditai chiefs, and frontier desperados, and Napoleons. Anything to get notoriety, anything to set the village, or the township, or the city, or the state, or the nation, or the planet shouting, "Look, there he goes, that is the man." And in 5 minutes' time, at no cost of brain, or labor, or genius, this mangy Italian tramp has beaten them all, transcended them all, outstripped them all, for in time their names will perish, but by the friendly help of the insane newspapers, and courts and kings and historians, his is safe, and live and thunder in the world all down the ages, as long as human speech shall endure. Oh, if it were not so tragic, how ludicrous it would be! She was so blameless, the Empress, and so beautiful, in mind and heart, in person and spirit, and whether with a crown upon her head, or without it and nameless, a grace to the human race, and almost a justification of its creation, would be, indeed, but that the animal that struck her down re-establishes the doubt. In her character was every quality that in woman invites and engages respect, esteem, affection, and homage. Her tastes, her instincts, and her aspirations were all high and fine, and all her life her heart and brain were busy with activities of a noble sort. As he had bitter griefs, but they did not sour her spirit, and as he had the highest honors in the world's gift, but she went her simple way unspoiled. She knew all ranks, and won them all, and made them her friends. An English fisherman's wife said, when a body was in trouble she didn't send her help, she brought it herself. Crowns have adorned others, but she adorned her crowns. It was a swift celebrity the assassin achieved. And it is marked by some curious contrasts. At noon last, Saturday, there was no one in the world who would have considered acquaintanceship with him a thing worth claiming or mentioning. No one would have been vain of such an acquaintanceship. The humblest honest bootblack would not have valued the fact that he had met him, or seen him at some time or other. He was sunk in abysmal obscurity. He was away beneath the notice of the bottom grades of officialdom. 3 hours later he was the one subject of conversation in the world. The gilded generals and admirals and governors were discussing him. All the kings and queens and emperors had put aside their other interests to talk about him. And wherever there was a man, at the summit of the world or the bottom of it, who by chance had at some time or other come across that creature, he remembered it with a secret satisfaction, and mentioned it, for it was a distinction now. It brings human dignity pretty low, and for a moment the thing is not quite realizable, but it is perfectly true. If there is a king who can remember, now, that he once saw that creature in a time past, he has let that fact out, in a more or less studiedly casual and indifferent way, some dozens of times during the past week. For a king is merely human. The inside of him is exactly like the inside of any other person. And it is human to find satisfaction in being in a kind of personal way connected with amazing events. We are all privately vain of such a thing. We are all alike. A king is a king by accident. The reason the rest of us are not kings is merely due to another accident. We are all made out of the same clay, and it is a sufficient poor quality. Below the kings, these remarks are in the air these days. I know it well, as if I were hearing them. The commander. He was in my army. The general. He was in my corps. The colonel. He was in my regiment. A brute. I remember him well. The captain. He was in my company. A troublesome scoundrel. I remember him well. The sergeant. Did I know him? As well as I know you. Why, every morning I used to, etc., etc. A glad, long story, told to devouring ears. The landlady. Any's the time he boarded with me. I can show you his very room, and the very bed he slept in. And the charcoal mark there on the wall, he made that. My little Johnny saw him do it with his own eyes. Didn't you, Johnny? It is easy to see, by the papers, that the magistrate and the constables, and the jailer treasure up the assassin's daily remarks and doings as precious things, and as wallowing this week in seas of blissful distinction. The interviewer too. He tried to let on that he is not vain of his privilege of contact with this man whom few others are allowed to gaze upon, but he is human, like the rest, and can no more keep his vanity corked in than could you or I. Some think that this murder is a frenzied revolt against the criminal militarism which is impoverishing Europe and driving the starving poor mad. That has many crimes to answer for, but not this one, I think. One may not attribute to this man a generous indignation against the wrongs done the poor. One may not dignify him with a generous impulse of any kind. When he saw his photograph and said, "I shall be celebrated," he laid bare the impulse that prompted him. It was a mere hunger for notoriety. There is another confessed case of the kind which is as old as history, the burning of the Temple of Ephesus. Among the inadequate attempts to account for the assassination, we must concede high rank to the many which have described it as a peculiarly brutal crime, and then added that it was ordained from above. I think this verdict will not be popular, both. If the deed was ordained from above, there is no rational way of making this prisoner even partially responsible for it, and the Genovan court cannot condemn him without manifestly committing a crime. Logic is logic, and by disregarding its laws even the most pious and showy theologian may be beguiled into preferring charges which should not be ventured upon except in the shelter of plenty of lightning rods. I witnessed the funeral procession, in company with friends, from the windows of the Kranz, Vienna's sumptuous new hotel. We came into town in the middle of the forenoon, and I went on foot from the station. Black flags hung down from all the houses. The aspects were Sunday-like. The crowds on the sidewalks were quiet and moved slowly. Very few people were smoking. Many ladies wore deep mourning. Gentlemen were in black as a rule. Carriages were speeding in all directions, with footmen and coachmen in black clothes and wearing black cocked hats. The shops were closed. In many windows were pictures of the Empress. As a beautiful young bride of 17, as a serene and majestic lady with added ears, and finally in deep black, and without ornaments, the costume she always wore after the tragic death of her son 9 years ago, for her heart broke then, and life lost almost all its value for her. The people stood grouped before these pictures, and now and then one saw women and girls turn away wiping the tears from their eyes. In front of the Kranz is an open square. Over the way was the church where the funeral services would be held. It is small and old and severely plain, plastered outside and whitewashed or painted, and with no ornament, but a statue of a monk in a niche over the door, and above that a small black flag. But in its crypt lie several of the great dead of the House of Habsburg, among them Maria Theresa and Napoleon's son, the Duke of Reichstadt. Hereabouts was a Roman camp, once, and in it the Emperor Marcus Aurelius died 1,000 years before the first Habsburg ruled in Vienna, which was 600 years ago and more. The little church is packed in among great modern stores and houses, and the windows of them were full of people. Behind the vast plate glass windows of the upper floors of the house on the corner one glimpsed terraced masses of fine-clothed men and women, dim and shimmery, like people under water. Under us the square was noiseless, but it was full of citizens. Officials in fine uniforms were flitting about on errands, and in a doorstep sat a figure in the uttermost raggedness of poverty, the feet bare, the head bent humbly down. A youth of 18 or 20, he was, and through the field glass one could see that he was tearing apart and munching riffraff that he had gathered somewhere. Blazing uniforms flashed by him, making a sparkling contrast with his drooping ruin of moldy rags, but he took not notice. He was not there to grieve for a nation's disaster. He had his own cares, and deeper. From two directions two long files of infantry came plowing through the pack and press in silence. There was a low, crisp order and the crowd vanished. The square save the sidewalks was empty. The private mourner was gone. Another order, the soldiers fell apart and enclosed the square in a double-ranked human fence. It was also swift, noiseless, exact like a beautifully ordered machine. It was noon now. 2 hours of stillness and waiting followed. Then carriages began to flow past and deliver the 200 and 300 court personages and high nobility's privilege to enter the church. Then the square filled up, not with civilians, but with army and navy officers in showy and beautiful uniforms. They filled it compactly, leaving only a narrow carriage path in front of the church, but there was no civilian among them. And it was better so. Dull clothes would have marred the radiant spectacle. In the jam in front of the church, on its steps, and on the sidewalk, was a bunch of uniforms which made a blazing splotch of color intense red, gold, and white which dimmed the brilliant eyes around them, and opposite them on the other side of the path, was a bunch of cascaded bright green plumes above pale blue shoulders which made another splotch of splendor emphatic and conspicuous in its glowing surroundings. It was a sea of flashing color all about, but these two groups were the high notes. The green plumes were worn by 40 or 50 Austrian generals. The group opposite them were chiefly knights of Malta and knights of a German order. The mass of heads in the square were covered by gilt helmets, and by military caps roofed with a mirror-like gaze, and the movements of the wearers caused these things to catch the sun rays, and the effect was fine to see. The square was like a garden of richly colored flowers with a multitude of blinding and flashing little suns distributed over it. Think of it, it was by command of that Italian loafer yonder on his imperial throne in the Geneva prison, that this splendid multitude was assembled there, and the kings and emperors that were entering the church from a side street were there by his will. It is so strange, so unrealizable. At 3 o'clock the carriages were still streaming by in single file. At 3:05 a cardinal arrives with his attendants, later some bishops. Then a number of archdeacons, all in striking colors, that add to the show. At 3:10 a procession of priests passed along, with crucifix. Another one, presently, after an interval, two more. At 3:50 another one, very long, with many crosses, gold embroidered robes, and much white lace, also great pictured banners, at intervals, receding into the distance. A hum of tolling bells makes itself heard, but not sharply. At 3:58 a waiting interval. Presently a long procession of gentlemen in evening dress comes in sight, and approaches until it is near to the square, then falls back against the wall of soldiers at the sidewalk, and the white shirt fronts show like snowflakes, and are very conspicuous where so much warm color is all about. A waiting pause. At 4:12 the head of the funeral procession comes into view at last. First, a body of cavalry, 4 abreast, to widen the path. Next, a great body of lancers, in blue, with gilt helmets. Next, 3 6 horse mourning dash coaches, outriders and coachmen in black, with cocked hats and white wigs. Next, troops in splendid uniforms, red, gold, and white, exceedingly showy. Now the multitude uncover. The soldiers present arms. There is a low rumble of drums. The sumptuous great hearse approaches, drawn at a walk by 8 black horses plumed with black bunches of nodding ostrich feathers. The coffin is borne into the church. The doors are closed. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.